Happy Sunday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in for another episode from the Isle of Dr. Garneau. I'm Kelly J. Lewis, and with me, of course, is Dr. Chris Garneau. Dr. Garneau, the last time that we spoke, we were unsure about the election, and now we're clear. At least we're clear.
Yeah, sort of. I mean, exactly. Depends on what reality you're living in. So Joe Biden, I think on most networks, has now gained, in addition to Pennsylvania, which made him the president-elect, has now also gained Arizona and Nevada. And Kelly, I know we talked about this last time on the show. I shared this with you. The Navajo Nation voted over 90% in favor of Joe Biden, and the statistics show that had they not voted in that high a number, even though it was a rural county that they were looking at, the Arizona could have gone into a recount. So I know you'd mentioned that last time, that a lot of times Indian tribes don't get a lot of recognition for their role in elections. And I thought that was great that there was at least one article out there that showed that. So that was pretty cool.
Did you see the CNN thing that said the percentages of voter turnout? And of course, it was white, black, Latin, something else, and Asian.
Yeah.
And all the Indians went, wait, what? Like, we swung this election.
Something else? Yeah, no. So anyways, I'm glad there was at least some recognition there. That was really great. Arizona, of course, and Nevada, you know. And this is, you know, if we think about the role and what the Democratic Party, I think, needs to look at moving forward, I think the Democratic Party is very aware that minority voters are a huge percentage of the party. But I think maybe this will lead to maybe extending more things within the platform to really look at specific minority groups. So, you know, if you look at some of the places where African Americans performed really, really well on Joe Biden's side would have been, you know, Georgia as a whole, but also parts of Philadelphia and Detroit, which swung Pennsylvania and Michigan around. Latino voters in Las Vegas and Arizona, and American Indian voters in Arizona. So, and if we were to even look at places like Texas, which got within 5 percentage points, I think we're maybe 1 or 2 presidential elections from Texas going blue. And when that happens, I think Republicans will give up on the Electoral College magically. But yeah, so anyways, I think a great story has been minority presence and the vice president-elect being not only the first woman, but the first woman of color. I think it's such a cool thing to talk about. My daughter was just so excited, Kelly. I can't tell you. When she came, it was after Pennsylvania was officially called, and you know, I was able to tell her, yeah, it looks like we're going to have a woman as a vice president. And I showed her this meme that was going around Facebook of all the vice presidents we've ever had. It's just this wall of white dudes, and then you get to Kamala Harris. And I was like, ah, that's really cool. So anyways, that was pretty fun for my daughter just to see some female representation at the highest in the executive.
It was fun for girls everywhere. I am telling you, all girls everywhere had a moment. It's beautiful.
And her speech, so it was the night that they officially, even though Trump, we'll get to Trump, even though Trump is not officially conceded, the quote-unquote victory speech that we heard on Saturday night, last Saturday, I thought Joe Biden gave a pretty good speech. It was very calm, which is kind of what he's been doing recently. But Kamala Harris, she went third degree feminist for about 10 minutes there. And I loved it. Oh, my gosh. So anyways, I am excited about her. You know, during the primaries, I feel like she was in embattled mode so much that I didn't really get a good sense of her. She wasn't really ever in my top three when I was watching the Democratic debates, but she's definitely, I think she is going to be a party leader in the future. I was just so impressed with that speech and how she has comported herself thus far.
I was impressed with both speeches because it felt like our turn back toward normalcy. It's like, oh God, actual people who know how to govern. Will you be our new mommy and daddy?
There was so much of that, totally. And here's Joe Biden has been speaking every day. On Monday of this last week, he already got his coronavirus, his COVID-19 task force together. And Kelly, there are women on the task force. There are people of color on the task force. And get this, they're all doctors and scientists. No MyPillow guys at all. I don't know how we're going to make it without a pillow corporate executive on the COVID-19 task force. So it definitely seems like there's an adult in the room.
Well, the most important question, though, is there a Trump on it?
There is not a single person named Trump.
That, like, automatically made my hands raise up in the air and a victory hurrah.
Yeah, but here's the issue. So now let's get to the other side. What's going on with the president? Well, it's lawsuit after lawsuit. And I can't remember the count as of yet. Most of them have already been struck down. Several of them have been under or are currently under consideration or scrutiny. But all of the legal experts that I keep hearing, from NPR to CNN to really every news outlet, says that the president doesn't have any standing because you can look at individual instances that look fishy. That is not sufficient evidence to say that you need a recount or that you need a massive purging of the ballots or a revote or any of the crazy things that he's calling for, because we don't have any evidence of systemic voter fraud. In other words, there was no one who was trying to rig it. No one was in on the game. And if you needed any more evidence than that, look at, Democrats don't like it, but look at how Republicans overperformed in the Senate. Yet Joe Biden is now leading Trump by at least 5 million votes. And what that means is that you have Americans who split their ticket. They like Republicans for Senate. They like them for the House. They gained a few seats there, but they voted against Donald Trump. That is a pretty clear message. And, you know, if there are any people out there who are wondering, well, you know, could there have been voter fraud? Well, in every large-scale election, yeah, there may be one or two cases. But in terms of widespread voter fraud, just that alone, the fact that we know people split their ballots is enough to really kind of show what's going on. Because if the Democrats were trying to rig it, wouldn't they also rig the Senate? Wouldn't they also rig the House? So clearly this was a fair and free election. And guess what? The Democrats didn't get everything they want. They didn't get the Senate. They don't have an overwhelming majority in the House. And this is how democracy works. And so the president has not conceded. He hasn't really done anything. The reports that I've been reading show that he hasn't had a security briefing in weeks. He hasn't had a COVID task force briefing in months, not since early October, over a month. He's pretty much checked out, and he is right now in survival mode. We're going to win this thing. We don't see any news briefings. All we see is tweets. Although we are getting some reports that while a lot of Senate Republicans are not willing to tell the president to step down, some have been, just a few. Mitt Romney, let's give him some credit. There are people close to the administration that are telling him the writing's on the wall. We need to do something. The country needs to get moving because a lot has to happen to transition Joe Biden into the White House. He has not been given any security briefing. Those are very important for the protection of America. The State Department has not given over any information from foreign heads of state. That is really important. So he's had no communication with foreign heads of state. The only thing we can surmise from this is either or, one or both. Donald Trump just really doesn't want to give up. And, you know, giving Joe Biden anything is evidence that he's giving up. And that's probably true. But also, I think if Donald Trump is on his way out, he wants to make Joe Biden's first few months in office as difficult as possible and his chances of failing as high as possible. Because I think, Kelly, get ready for this. I think he might try to run again in 2024. And a failed Biden presidency would more than certainly open up the door for him to do that. So just give you a lot to chew on. So anyway, what do you think of all of this situation we're in?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Number one, the lawsuits, I think that's at 12 or 13, all failed. And it's amazing to me that these attorneys, and you're starting to see these reports that these attorneys are going in there and just won't say fraud. Like this judge was asking one of the attorneys, I think it was in Michigan. So are you alleging there's fraud? Not at this time, no. like,
yeah,
you know, they're very much backpedaling. But what do you say about these senators like Mitch McConnell and all of these other ones, and people like the lady that's head of the GSA who isn't recognizing this election? Well, I have to follow its constitutional process. And really kind of fueling Trump's fire. Is that for 2024 too? Also?
Yeah, I'm going to give you, this is my opinion, and I'll try to give you the evidence I have to back up my opinion. And I don't know if I'm right or not. I do think Trump is already eyeing 2024. You know, Grover Cleveland did it. He served two non-consecutive terms. It can happen. So here's what I think is happening. Republicans that are not Mitt Romney, and who in the Senate, at least, and those who have an election in their future and are thinking about their voting base, those who live in very Trumpy states, they are very careful not to tell Trump to concede, because Trump went just crazy when Fox called, you know, Arizona for Biden before anyone else did. Trump says, don't trust Fox News, they're fake news, and everybody fell lockstep. You know, like, yep, Trump's bad, or Fox is bad. So Trump has this crazy ability within that party to basically cast a curse on anyone who defies him. So a lot of them are very close. Mitt Romney doesn't think about it, because Trump hates Romney anyway. So they don't have, I mean, there's no argument there. So here's what Republicans are doing. They're not saying there's widespread voter fraud, at least not McConnell, not any of the higher-ups. So this is the fine line political speech they're using. The president has every right to mount a legal defense and to investigate, you know, the election. And, you know, we need to let the votes be counted, because there are still votes being counted. That is true. Yes, there are still votes being counted. And yes, the president has the right to file lawsuits. But it's what they're not saying, which is that in order to move past this, in the best interest of our national security and our country as a whole, we need a peaceful transition of power that is cooperative between the outgoing and the incoming administration. George Bush, I am just like, I like the guy more and more now that he's not in office, and I just can't even believe it, wrote, I don't know if he wrote it or not, but anyway, it's just an eloquent letter. Basically saying, hey, Biden and I didn't always get along, but he's a good man. You know, he's a man of faith. He's a man that we need right now. He's a calm voice in the storm. And let's all, you know, hope for a peaceful transition of power. You have people like Jimmy Carter saying, hey, I lost. You know, I conceded. You got people, other people who have lost races saying, you know, the most gracious thing you can do right now is to just duck out. Al Gore said it. You know, so you've got all these voices, Democrats and mostly all Democrats, and a few Republicans, and Republicans especially who are not running for re-election anymore, who are saying we need this transition of power to happen. And I think Republicans right now, they don't want to upset their base and possibly wreck these elections coming up in Georgia, because that's the other thing we have to talk about. There are two runoff elections coming up in Georgia. One between Governor Perdue and Ossoff. Will Ossoff?
Yes. John Ossoff.
There we go. And the other one, I can't remember. He's a mayor. The Democrat's a mayor. And Loeffler is a Republican. She's a real Trumpy QAnon. I want to say it's like
Warlock or Warnock. Not Warlock. Warnock.
I think he might be the mayor of Savannah, something like that. So, anyways, those elections are really close. And Georgia is going to be nuts, because we got about a month and a half before those elections. The amount of money that the Republican Party is trying to raise right now for those races is incredible. And the last thing before I finish my little rant here, Trump has been raising money. And the email that's going out to his supporters basically says for his legal defense. But you have to spend, I think it's over $5,000 before any of that money actually goes to his legal defense. Almost all of that money goes to Donald Trump's political campaign or political action committee, which could be used for a 2024 run, or can also be given to the Republican National Committee in order to shuffle that money into Georgia, which is another reason why I don't think Republicans want to speak out against Trump right now. This is not conspiracy theory stuff. That's how politics works, right? You know, Trump can say, I can raise a ton of money for my, you know, devoted followers, and I can, you know, definitely donate some of that to you, but you have to have my back. And so I think there's a lot of talking right now going on behind the scenes about we need to stand in solidarity with the president so that we can keep the Senate locked down. I think Republicans care about the Senate. I don't think they actually care about the presidency. I think the RNC would be perfectly fine if Trump rode off into the sunset, but they need his base and they need his money.
Well, like Trump gives a F about decorum, right? But number two, you know, Andrew Yang moved to Georgia to help everybody who mobilized the black voters in Georgia. And that's awesome. I love
it. That's so cool. Yeah.
Going out there and motivating the voters of color, because they're going to have to turn out again. And all eyes are on Georgia.
Oh, we're all going to have to. Georgia is going to be on every Georgia on my mind. It's going to be on all of our minds here in just a little bit. So that's what we're going to be seeing in the next month. Okay, we can veer back to this. We have some time, but I do want to talk about it's being overshadowed right now. But I do want to talk about the virus and Oklahoma politics real quick. So the coronavirus, we had like our worst day nationally. I think the worst day ever since May 1st. Was yesterday. We're spiking. There are major spikes all around the United States. Oklahoma had over 2,000 positive cases in one day. Yesterday, that may have been a record day or close to. I know there was one day where we had 4,000, but that was because testing centers weren't open for a few days. But we know we had some big, solid numbers. The Dakotas, where I'm from, oh my gosh, Kelly, their hospitals are full. They are just completely full. And, you know, I don't know exactly what it's like here in Oklahoma, but we are just not in a mindset where we're ready to tackle this thing. And part of it has to do with good leadership. But, you know, when I talk to some folks about what's going on in North Dakota back home, a lot of them say, you know, we live in these small towns and we get these symptoms and you don't want to go get tested because if there's X number of positive cases, then everyone has to wear masks. And then they, you know, shut things down, and you don't want to be the person that made that happen. And so there is a stigma against getting tested for COVID from the people I've been talking to. And I kind of wonder if it's like that in rural communities, especially those that lean a little bit more conservative, because there is this narrative that it's not a big deal. And so if you get tested, then you're kind of like giving in. And it was just a wild thing to hear living in a place like Norman. But Kelly, what do you think? I mean, you've lived in Oklahoma way longer than I have. Can you see that kind of sentiment operating here as well?
Absolutely. And we see it with our lack of numbers, true numbers that are coming out from our schools, from our universities, from our institutions. Our own interim director of our state health department said mask mandate isn't necessary. And our governor came out, they both came out this week at one press conference and kind of was like, yeah, we just need everybody to do what they need to do. Instead of the governor saying, hey, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, and that's been the line. Like, well, we're going to let Oklahomans decide for themselves, you know, what they want to do, and to, you know, please take care of yourself and each other, but we're not going to make you do anything. In other words, we're not going to actually institute any overarching enforceable kind of thing. And that's the issue that we've been dealing with for a long time. And here's the thing about there is, I've been looking for the guy's name. I can't find it. There's a former lawmaker in Oklahoma who is a physician he's a Republican. He's going to run. It looks like he's going to try to run against Stitt in the next governor election. Because as a physician, he's seeing what's going on with COVID-19, and he is, in his own words, he's appalled at the public policy or the lack of public policy stance that's been taking place. You know, one thing I've learned about Oklahoma politics is that at the governor level, anyways, Democrats have a snowball's chance, and you know where, of mounting a great you know, a great challenge. Maybe that's not always the case. I could see a lot of Democrats, if there isn't a great viable Democratic challenger, if a third party guy steps in, or an independent guy, if this guy steps in, I could see the governor having a real challenge to have to contend with. So that's something to look out for if that campaign gains steam. If I can find his name, I'll share that. But that's happening here in Oklahoma. And you know, we've got cases now that are rivaling what we saw when the pandemic was at its height. We have hospitals that are filling up. So it's something to think about. The other thing, let's get some positive news out there back home. James Lankford, who I've interested between our two senators, I feel like he's maybe, not to throw shade at Inhofe, but he's maybe a little more open to ideas and different kinds of ideas. When he found out the State Department was not giving Joe Biden any information, he did vow that he would step in and do something so that we can get a transition of power going in. So anyways, I just wanted to mention what was happening here locally at home. But more than anything, I think the election is maybe taking us away. And this is another issue I think Trump needs to concede. It's taking us away from dealing with the pandemic nationally, but also here, even at the local level, I think people are really unaware at how the cases have really been spiking.
I think that you were right at the first of the show when you said Trump is basically just kind of throwing his hands up. I mean, he was golfing when the news came down, which I thoroughly enjoyed, but that's all he's been doing now. It's like, yeah, I don't even care about COVID-19. They didn't want me, let him die kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And at this point, it just seems like he doesn't care. By the way, I found the name of the guy. He's a former Oklahoma State Senator. His name is Irvin Yen from Oklahoma City. So Irvin Yen, you can look for him. Okay, so let's talk about a few other things. I want to get to media before we run out of time here. Kelly, have you heard about Parler?
Oh, Lord, let's talk about Parler.
Yes, so I do not have a Parler account, but some of my friends have started one. And it's basically the way they've explained it and the way I've seen it explained on the news is it's like Twitter, except you can be openly racist and share conspiracy theories and they won't do anything about it. So guess who this appeals to?
The Proud Boys.
Yeah.
QAnon.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because one of the things I've noticed, Twitter and especially my Facebook, is they have really, you know, as opposed to 2016, and I think it's because of public backlash, they have been attaching, even Twitter has been taking down a lot of things that Trump has said, either that or they put little addendum saying, this is disputed information that has not been verified, which really ticks him off and ticks off his supporters because they feel they're being censored. But, you know, here this it brings up a really good question. What is the role of social media? And I think it really is up to each individual company to decide how they're going to operate. But if you're going to have a social media company that anyone is going to take seriously, I think you have to do what Facebook and Twitter have been doing this last year and be able to say, look, we're going to cut the bull and we're not going to allow disinformation to spread, especially if it could undermine our democracy. And that is really what the issue has been about. If you allow conspiracy theory to operate as if it's actually news, you know, social media is a new form of media. It's like a newspaper. You know, there are junk newspapers out there. There are, you know, junk TV news stations out there. And I guess now there are junk social media platforms as well. And what it means is that media consumers need to be more savvy. But what's interesting now, instead of, you know, not being able to get your conspiracy theories to fly because YouTube won't carry the videos and Facebook won't let you paste the content, now it's like we have an alternate reality media sphere where you have the National Enquirer, who likes to jump on, you know, the Trump's conspiracies. You've got OAN, which is, if you've never watched OAN, you've got to watch OAN just to get a taste of it. It's nuts. Trump likes to call on them first in press conferences. And now you've got Parler for social media. So it's almost like, Kelly, we're splitting off into two different worlds where we get to live in completely different realities, which then brings us up to a point that I know you wanted to talk about, which has to do with how does this divided states of America move forward? So, you know, what was your thought process on that this week?
What I was thinking and what the other day Mindy and I wanted to know, and of course this is all Thomas, cult 45, what makes it a cult? Does it always have to have a religious aspect to be a cult?
Sort of, like, so cults are really just revolve around charismatic leaders. Like, that's like the only definition or you know, that's really what defines it. And, you know, the sometimes I've heard it referred to as the Church of Trump. It's kind of like that. So now I'm not, you know, equating it with religion, but it doesn't have to be religion. It's basically when you follow a person. So there are, you know, think about all the Republicans that Trumpsters have turned their back on. Mitt Romney, John McCain, George Bush, the last three previous Republicans to run for president, right? So any kind of reasonable voice out there. It's basically whatever Trump says goes. He says Fox News is wrong. Okay, we hate Fox News now. He says this guy who quit my administration says it was in chaos. Well, like that must be a bad person. So whoever the charismatic leader likes, we like. Whoever the charismatic leader hates, we hate. And so it doesn't even have to do with ideology. There are no principles to it. There's no overarching philosophy to it. It's just what the leader says goes. And that is kind of how cults work, Kelly.
Okay, so what happens to these people? I mean, what happens? I mean, they can't. And it's so weird. Like, it's like it really is like this mirrored alternate reality. Like, I saw one of my Republican classmates get on and say, we're going to get lectured by people who didn't accept our results for 4 years to accept their results. It's like, wait a minute. I'm a bleeding heart, tree hugging hippie liberal, and it's not like I didn't accept the election results. Like, what?
And that's one of the narratives that's being put out there, which is just a way to distract. Well, you didn't do it, so neither do I. I've seen a lie that's been perpetuated over and over again that Hillary Clinton did not concede. She did. It's on the internet. You can watch it. You know, like, it's. And so it's kind of ridiculous, but you get into this hive mind where you keep echoing the same thing in this echo chamber back and forth. And so the reality is we have to live with each other. I was listening to an episode of This American Life hosted by Ira Glass from a few weeks ago, and it was talking about how before and after the election, it's really hard to buy a gun in the United States. A lot of gun stores are cleared out. And it wasn't just conservatives buying guns, it was also liberals. That there were Democratic voters who are afraid of the divisiveness of what happens when Trump actually leaves. You know, a lot of liberals are going to do a million MAGA march, or maybe they already did if this is recorded on Sunday. You know, a lot of liberals are like, I'm steering clear of that, you know. And so we do live in a weird divided time where, you know, everything is just turned up to 11. And one of the things, you know, in our closing minutes, I just want to say this. It was so reassuring and refreshing to hear Biden speak in soft, not quite monotone, but very soft tones of voice with reassuring words that everything's going to be okay. It's sort of like Grandpa walking into the room and saying, all right, kids, we're going to be fine. And I'm not making fun of the guy's age. I'm just saying that's kind of how it felt to me. He feels like my grandfather in a kind of way. It was in times where things are so chaotic and so divided, it was nice to have someone who feels like they're taking the reins. I think he's got a chance of uniting us, but we've got to get that dial turned down first.
Well, and just real quick, getting back to that social media part of it, is that part of that echo chamber of them being able, of Cult 45, to being able to really kind of hone that message within their own little world? I mean, is that where Parler and these kind of unregulated, shall we say, social media sites are? Is that the direction?
That's what I wonder too. You know, like we have free speech in this country, and Parler can do what they want. But yeah, if it's all people from Trumpism, you know, I'm not going to say Republicanism even. It's just Trumpism. If they all move over there and create their own little cocoon, then they start living in a completely alternate reality. And maybe it's not such a bad thing that we've got, you know, liberal spies that are crossing the line to go over there. Not necessarily crossing the line, but starting up accounts. just to kind of see the things that are being said, because I've been seeing on, you know, my Facebook things that have been screenshot and posted from Parler, and some of the stuff that they're doing on there is just reprehensible. I mean, it is, you know, and when we think about what could incite violence, I think, you know, having a media platform where everyone gets to amplify their voice and the loudest, most aggressive, and possibly most violent voices win out on the day, I don't know. It is kind of terrifying. So, you know, I don't know if it's the FCC's job to tell anybody what to say or to shut things down, but it's, you know, what do you do when you have the stuff that's unchecked? And so, you know, we're just, again, you know, it's been the same thing we've been saying all 2020. We're moving into uncharted territories. I want to leave with a couple things. The best quote I heard all week was, I survived the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the aughts, the 2010s, and every month of 2020. I thought that was brilliant. And the second thing, Kelly, I want to say an RIP to, you know, we lost a lot of people, Sean Connery and Eddie Van Halen. Let's add Alex Trebek. I love the show. Aww. He is such a kind, gracious guy. I'm so sorry to see him die from cancer. Now, I know I mentioned this before we got on. They are talking about LeVar Burton from Reading Rainbow, perhaps taking over the reins on Jeopardy. Nothing would make me happier. I love that guy. He'd be such a – I don't know if it's going to happen, but I think he is a great idea for a replacement.
You know what? It's like I said, we don't have enough LeVar Burton in our lives, especially our adult lives. I mean, you and I, we're Reading Rainbow kids, right? I mean
– Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah. No, we need LeVar Burton.
This is, and more than anything at this time, if there's anybody we need, it's LeVar Burton in 2020.
That's right. He could turn 2020 around for sure. So we're gonna write a letter or an email and encourage this. So
get the campaign going. Absolutely.
That's right. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode from the Isle of Dr. Garneau. Make sure that you catch us back here next Sunday. And if you miss any of our episodes, you can catch up with them wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kelly J. Lewis at Talk Jive Radio. Have a great day, everyone.